This is your MO. It's That's So MLS. A North American soccer podcast with myself, Nick Thornton. With me, as always, is Andrew Bates. Andrew, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. We're welcoming MLS legend Phil Neville.
Woo!
Back with Portland Timbers. What a challenging time it is to enjoy the Portland, in either Portland team.
Yeah. I scrolled through the Instagram comments on the announcement just to see what Portland Timbers fans had to say. And it was much worse than I thought it might be, and I didn't think it was going to be good. But just in all seriousness, Timbers fans, I think I found the silver lining here. Okay? Just bear with me here.
Phil Neville.
Hired by Inter Miami. Inter Miami sucks. Fire him. Inter Miami gets messy and is good. So, I'm not saying there won't be some growing pains, but Timbers fans, I mean, it's a pattern of one so far. But upon his eventual ousting, which I'm assuming is going to be March, maybe May of 2024, you know, maybe that ultra big highlight reel name will be coming. Maybe Messi will. Imagine that Inter MLS move. Messi requests an interleague transfer. What the fuck are they going to do? Say no to him? He's like, guys, I need to go to Timbers.
How much GAM does that look like to you?
I don't know. 900,000 in a first round draft pick?
Sure. I was going to ask you in your scenario if you imagined the Phil Neville the Phil Neville makeup player, the Phil Neville apology player, will that be like a Messi like player or a literal Messi? Is Messi just going to do a tour? Is everyone going to get Messi eventually?
I feel like it's only fair. I actually think musical chairs Messi is the most. If we're going to have a league of parody, that's probably how we should do it. That's sorry, parody, not parody, but. Maybe that as well. I mean,
wasn't there somebody in like a Houston Messi jersey at one point?
I can almost bet money that there was. If you can dream it, it's been on a Houston jersey. I just want to lump this in while we're here talking about failing upwards. Chris Armas was also officially unveiled as the Colorado Rapids new coach. So we've got that to look forward to as well.
How do you feel about this? Because simultaneously, I am not. I don't think that it's an exciting or I think that Colorado needs to be moving up, and I don't know that this is the way to do it. Mm. I don't know for sure that I consider it a direct failing upwards because he went and did some high profile assistant coach stuff.
Yeah.
Unless he also got fired from those roles, but. To say, at the very least, he did go get some levels.
It's true. And we did say in the last show, like, when this rumor was announced, we were like, it's a little bit unfair on Chris Armas. Like, you can't say he's exactly had a trailblazing list of success at MLS clubs. But, you know, he obviously, I think we rate him as a decent coach. I think my thing more is, like, if you're a Colorado Rapids fan and you've had a series of interim managers and I would say, again, not even bad coaches necessarily. I liked Robin Fraser, but ultimately not able to get the job done. I don't think you announce Chris Armas as a name that you immediately has the like, wow-wee, yeah, what's Colorado Rapids going to look like under him? Like, I kind of just see him as like a bit more of the shuffle the deck and find out. I would just imagine that the Rapids expectations were probably low, and this is probably still well below the line of Rapids expectations for a coach. I feel like it's what more of like a similar, I'm like, just read the room, guys. Like, maybe this isn't the signing that's going to get your fan base excited.
What you need is a systems coach. Right, like somebody who will be able to sort of transform your program from the top, from the bottom up, and I think that somebody like a Robin Fraser or a Chris Armas who is trying to make their mark in their first position is not, or in their, I mean, it's not his first position, but, you know, is trying to break out as a head coach and get that defining moment. I don't know that that's who you turn to for that.
Yeah, not necessarily. I mean, it's not that it hasn't worked out before, but as a long-term solution, not really. And so I feel like at best, what, you know, Colorado maybe has Chris Armas for a season and a half, unless he really does just completely redo the team and turn them into a wonder again. I mean, and remember, like, they were a decent side for a year there. Like, it was a project that felt like it finally had turned a corner. I just feel like, you know, you've got a coach like Gio Savarese available. I see him as a bit more of that, like, systems coach that can come in and be like, all right, here's the model. Yeah, anyway, not entirely certain about that one. You're right, it's a little bit unfair on him. We also had a slew of coaches get turfed since we last talked as well.
Speaking of short-term coaches, you mean to tell me that hiring Hernan Losada a second time in MLS was not a good idea?
I'm not saying it.
Here's the stat that I dug up here, is that Losada was a player at Beerschot in, I believe, I'm gonna botch this, but Switzerland, and he was a player there. He moved into the coaching ranks. He took over as coach. He left. He wasn't fired, but the team was on a 7-game winless streak when he left for DC. He made it 42 games. For DC, 41 games. Montreal, 40 games. Like clockwork.
Yeah. Hey, consistency is key.
He never broke 500 in any of those positions.
Hmm.
16 wins for Montreal was not the was not enough for Big Joey Saputo, who I don't have that set in front of me. His is notoriously quick on the trigger for coaches.
Yeah. Yeah, probably the right move, although I have to be honest, I was surprised at how well he did at Montreal. I mean, well being relative, but I felt like Montreal certainly wasn't a bad side to watch him coach. And he certainly seemed to take lessons from his time at DC and adapt, so that was all right. The one that surprised me a little bit more than that was Charlotte FC getting rid of Christian Latanzio. I don't think you can be like, what? He made Charlotte into a behemoth, but I think he really did come in at a very difficult time, turned the team around, got them into the playoffs, and they looked competitive. I think to be disappointed at not going further in the playoffs shows just how far he came with the team. So
that's right.
I feel like it's kind of one of those, like, I don't know. More and more, I'm becoming a, like, if it ain't completely broke, don't fix it. I think it's easy to say, oh, let's hit the reset button, but it just feels like kind of an unnecessary roll of the dice, especially because in almost all of these cases they don't have another coach waiting, so it's not like they've got their next guy teed up. It's like, okay, well, the search begins now, and you're like, well, all right. I mean, I guess if you're gonna do it, you've got to do it sometime. No time like the present. As ever, though, can you get someone better? Because that's a much bigger question than do we move on from our current coach?
I agree with that. Perennially, I kind of feel like we hear about this a little bit less than we used to, but MLS is notorious as being a market that requires a very unique skill set to succeed in.
Yeah.
There are more sporting directors than they're used to. The rules function slightly differently than they used to at the time that people really felt that you couldn't succeed at all without a previous knowledge of the league. But it's still kind of true. You have to, the roster of people who know the league, are good at coaching, and have not recently fucked up is not deep.
No, and I think if you take a look at around the league at the teams that are currently in the playoffs, you know, not all, but a good chunk of them do have coaches with significant MLS experience, right? So, yeah, it can certainly make a difference.
As per your note about Charlotte, it's wild. It, you know, being surprised that them doing that after losing in the wild card game, the team they lost to in the wild card game is also not getting their coach back.
Mm-hmm.
What do you make of that? Is that a mutual? Is that a departure? Or is that a firing?
I mean, I think none of the three were technical firings. They were mutual partings of ways, conscious uncouplings, etc. I can't remember what the Troy Lazane story was, but
moved on, announcing Tuesday they've opted not to renew his contract for the MLS season. This was a report.
We're not firing you, but we are moving on. I feel a bit more fine about this one. I didn't hate him. I think he got sent off in their last game. And I'd sort of noted, like, it's not a great look to not play a great game and get sent off. More on that later with some other coaches. But, yeah, I don't know. I thought he was fine. I think the Red Bulls saying, like, we did think he did a good job. We also, you know, we heard loud and clear, like, this season wasn't good enough from the team. I think that's probably a fair assessment of things. I think despite all the promise that Red Bull showed, they probably could have done better. And this is one where I'm a bit like, yeah, he was an interim coach anyway. It probably makes time it probably makes sense to take the time to make the change now for Red Bulls and think bigger and longer term if that's what they want to do. I know I'm kind of contradicting myself here with a couple of these things, but if it's an interim coach or a recently like extended interim coach, I feel a little bit better about a team being like, you know, they did an okay job, and also we're not going all in on Troy Lazane to rebuild Red Bulls to take them to the next level. I'm like, yeah, that would maybe be a bit more of an insane decision than going, let's see what else we can do.
Also, looks like they're trying to replace their sporting director.
Yeah.
So it'll be more of a wholesale change. I don't think nobody is outright copping to the idea of I don't think anybody is saying this when they are firing or not firing people, whether or not the playoffs were a part of it. Montreal tried to say, oh, we were going to fire Losada anyway, which I did, maybe, but. I think that at least in the Eastern Conference, this kind of shows that in the expanded world of MLS playoffs, making it to the final eight does not necessarily guarantee you a ticket.
I mean, maybe making it to the final eight does, but if apparently just getting to the knockout round doesn't.
Of the conference.
Yeah. And I think that's fair. I think that given, you know, I think in at least one conference, I mean, you're more likely to make the playoffs than not. I think it's okay to aim for a little bit higher than that. So I guess maybe my Charlotte FC comment is maybe moot then. I think it just acknowledging that it's difficult to find good coaches. Not everybody can be MLS's coach of the year, Pat Noonan.
That's right. We've got awards. FC Cincinnati has ran away with many of them.
Feels fair.
Did quite well in the regular season.
Yeah.
That Lucho Acosta goal that won goal of the year is a joy to watch.
Yeah. And I feel like if you beat like four defenders on a run from midfield, like they have to give it to you, right? Not to mention the finish.
Whew.
other sort of news popping around the league, we of course heard that Nico Lodero has said this season will be his last with the Sounders, which is certainly no big surprise, but is certainly a big moment for the Sounders, both as a team and their fan base. Lodero was really a key fixture, a key face as part of Sounders 2.0, and really, I think it's hard to argue that they haven't been better since the Dempsey era, and Lodero's been a key part of that. And speaking of key pieces, we've seen the revival of Sporting Kansas City in the playoffs, which we'll get to. Unfortunately, heading into the next round, one of their best young promising players, who has absolutely come to life in the playoffs, Logan Ndembe, is out for the rest of the season with an ACL tear. So yet another just kick in the balls injury, or in the knee balls, I guess, injury blow for SKC. I think he had 3 goals in the playoffs leading up to now. So the lack of luck continues at Sporting Kansas City. At this point, it's no minor miracle that they're even in the playoffs and have gotten so far. But I feel like given the injury woes and their ability to just keep kind of plowing through it, who knows, you know? They could have it in them.
They've been exciting. Now that they've been exciting to watch, and I think the only, if I have my numbers right, the only non, the only lower seed to make it. So now that New York is out, they're the chaos pick.
Yeah, and RSL too. So they really are the chaos pick. I'm all in.
I was going to say that Ian McKay was named MLS Assistant Referee of the Year, which is great because I love Minor Threat.
Wow. Deep cut joke there. If any fan listening to this show gets that, please write in and we'll come up with some prize for you. Wow.
Not meant to be an insult to assistant referees, but I'm surprised that has its own role.
Yeah. It's like, where's the cutoff?
You know? I would like to win attacking left-sided attacking midfielder of the year.
Yeah. Yeah. Left-sided player who's actually left-footed. Come back. Audi moment of the first half of the season.
Kai Wagner, who we spoke about as being the subject of a investigation into racial abuse in a match against the New England Revolution, has been suspended. His contract was running out, and it looks like he's going to be gone.
Yep. There was rumors of him leaving for a, I think, likely European destination anyway. I mean, he sounded sort of contrite about the situation, but used an anti-Asian slur in German against Bobby Wood, who had played in Germany. Not that that, like, how could Kai Wagner have known that? But also, maybe don't say the fucking racist thing.
Awful.
Yep.
Get out of here.
Bye.
I was going to say NWSL final.
Yeah.
Happened on the 11th, last weekend. Gotham FC, the former Sky Blue FC, beat OL Reign 2-1 in San Diego. This was noted for a couple of reasons, including the fact that Gotham placed last year, made it to first place. It was also Megan Rapinoe's last game, unfortunately. She tore her ACL in like minute 4. So that is an unfortunate way to see that happen.
Yeah.
But it's a great moment for Gotham. The game seemed very exciting and interesting with, you know, you had Gotham going having that, I believe, taking the lead. I had it where
I think that's right.
That's right. The Lynn Williams scored after being played in by Mitch Purse, who had an amazing game. Rose Lavelle also looked great, scored, equalized after 2 quick passes. And also did some great playmaking in the second half. Could have almost scored in stoppage time, but I guess it was called as a penalty. So she got another opportunity as a free kick. It wasn't a penalty. Sorry, it was a red card based on handling outside the area. One thing Canadian women's national team fans remember with some levels of frustration.
If your feet are in, but your hands are out, it's a red card and you can see yourself out. yeah, sucks. But letter of the law, that's a red. They missed the free kick too, so.
Yeah, it hit the wall.
It was also Allie Krager's last game.
Oh!
She's
congratulations on
well.
A great career. I just always like the change, the sea change that Gotham has taken since being sky blue and playing out of, you know,
Batman's hometown.
That's right. Which is, I looked it up. It is Gotham is a legitimate nickname for New York. If anybody is wondering about this, but they were sky blue. They were playing out of, they were having attendance problems. They had atrocious, practice conditions in college fields and stuff like that. Things nobody should have, no professional should have had to put up with. And, they've been playing games at Red Bull Arena and they have this amazing rebrand and they have some great players and, very happy for them and their fan base. Unfortunately, they didn't do a parade or anything. Cause they were we didn't expect to win. Don't know what to tell you.
The true underdog story is that, you haven't written the Oscar acceptance speech. They came by honestly. Yeah, I thought they played very well. Rain, we know, can be a beast. And I thought they polished them off pretty tidily in this game. So congrats to them. The only other piece of news, which is kind of old news and unfortunately I have no real update on, is, of course, there is the controversy surrounding Vanni Sartini's sounding off on MLS Pro after...
Let's go right to the Whitecaps game. Let's get into it. Let's get it hot. Make it hot as he did so bombastically. You were in attendance for this.
Yeah. It's been a minute since I've been to a playoff game, but I did go to this game with a friend of the show. Travis was there.
Hi, Travis.
I also saw Isabel and Ricardo, so they say hi.
Hi, Isabel Ricardo.
Yeah,
this is a great catch up for me.
I have nothing to say about the game, but those are the people I saw.
Broke the attendance record, 30,000, more than 30,000 fans in attendance, I believe that was the number quoted by the Whitecaps, and the match that they came to see was. Cagey, it was explosive emotionally. It was not a win, but it was much closer to what I think people thought the Whitecaps are capable of against LAFC than the first match of the series.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was a great atmosphere. BC Place was as rockin'. And certainly as full as I've seen it in Vancouver's MLS time. I mean, obviously it broke the record, but the whole atmosphere of it was they definitely did their work to put on a show and make it feel like an event. I'd agree as well, a much closer performance in terms of, I think, the first game of the series. I mean, we just got absolutely pummeled by the Denny Bwanga train and company. It's a bit unfortunate. I mean, it's funny how a narrative can change after a game. Cause honestly, after the game, I was and I didn't see the first penalty close up and the highlight they showed on the big screen, wasn't all that helpful. So I was I don't know, whatever, call it a PK. That's fine. But my overall sense was I guess it was disappointing, and it was disappointing to see your coach sent off and a little bit of arguing with the referee at the end. And I think that continued, and the referee had to be, like, escorted out of a different entrance, but, like, I didn't see any of that, and I was just like, yeah, that's kind of disappointing, but, like, we played okay, but, like, LAFC still, I think, deserve to win. And then you go home and you watch the highlights, and then you watch the press conferences, and the narrative starts to change. Because in my mind, I was like, eh, kind of a fun game. Too bad we lost.
Right. So you weren't like hot about it at all.
No. And certainly lots of people around me were. But if I know one thing, it's being a sober person and watching a lot of MLS games, is it just takes a lot less to surprise me or get me like irate. I'm not saying I don't shout and, you know, try to do my part. But I have a certain level of objectivity I'm not expecting the average fan to have. And truly on the PK shout, I was like, you know, I see two defenders sort of colliding together on an attacker, and the attacker goes down. I'm like, yeah, we see that given. Seeing the highlights, I was like, yeah, we do see it given, but that is very, very, very soft. And I do agree that, you know, Larea going down later was much more a clear foul. I think he's fishing for it also. But to give one and not give the other is bad. But of course, the real story about all of this was the comments Vanni Sartini made post sending off. And
well, I see it as a continuum. Is it
okay?
You have these two events as you talk about. Both of them are the Larea Maria one is hilarious, and where near to the end of the first half, Maria fouls Larea and then acts like he was the one that was injured. And Mario does the same thing in the second half, like on a 3-second delay, which was hilarious to me.
Yeah.
If you're a Whitecaps fan, you're coming into the end of this on the, you know, losing 1-0 and looking at these and feeling a little aggrieved. The Whitecaps are pressing high up. The goalkeeper has been moved into the attacking area, and Schaaf receives the ball and turns and runs right into the rigid shoulder of referee Tim Ford, which, you know, was that this is analyzed later, but there was definitely collision with the ball carrier between the ball carrier and the referee. The referee lets it rock. The play goes down to the other end. The goalkeeper is up, so it's scored. But it is called offside on VAR because the goal, every player was forward, so it could not have the pass that enabled the goal was offside. Then, as you note, Sartini just loses it on the side. He's yelling. He's gets sent off. Players are, I definitely also agree that I'm not for it, with like the amount of circling the referee that was being done. But there is something that a certain amount of righteous energy will give to you. Sartini legitimately does walk back onto the pitch. That was the first moment where I'm like, this is too much. This is too much. This is not helping you. This is not. I think I was also kind of fired up and jammed up, and I wanted to engage in that righteous energy, righteous anger, but it was a little too much. Especially again, given that they got the ball, that they got the call that they wanted at the end of it. However, if what you see when you watch the press conference is that Sartini gets up there, and he lays out basically exactly what you said. He says that he felt that it could have been a penalty if theirs was a penalty, and if theirs wasn't a penalty, then the penalty that was called wasn't. And he said, you know, I like him. He's a good guy. Everyone is capable of having a bad performance. The referees had a shocking performance tonight, one of the worst performances I've ever seen. Which, those everything that had happened previously, all of that taken alone, I think is enough for at least a hefty fine at MLS. for how they consider it. Mm. But then you have the tweet, and I think that why everybody is waiting and watching on what's happening with Vanni Sartini is because we don't have evidence of this. I'm just looking for the tweet itself. It's the Sun Province's JJ Adams tweets about that when he walks into the room, he checks to see, he asks, "Are you rolling?" And he says, "If they find the referee face down in False Creek tonight, they'll investigate me for it." This has immediately drawn negative attention from the Referees Association, and a lot of people are concerned about it because it's simultaneously, I think that it was intended as a joke, but it's just a little bit, again, just too much.
Yeah.
The VWFC presser starts off with Vanni Sartini asking if we were rolling, then seeing if ref Tim Ford ends up found floating face down in False Creek tonight, the cops might come looking for him. Laugh emoji. To clarify, he's not saying he'd do it, but everyone would think he had. That's the only, those two tweets from JJ Adams are the only firm evidence and information that people have about this.
Except for the MLS Disciplinary Committee, which does have, they sent video, the Whitecaps sent video of that comment.
They do. They have
to the league as a part of the investigation into the whole fracas. So there is presumably audio or video of it that the league has as a part of their investigation.
That was one of the things that was really surprising to me, is that hasn't been posted publicly. I don't know. Obviously, the point of the tweet is that he checked first to make sure that the cameras weren't rolling, but I'm sure somebody must have got it. What? Well,
yeah. I think they did, but I understand, like, they obviously, regardless of intent or content, they would not want to publicly release, like, if people didn't hear the comment, I don't think you want to be putting that comment out into the world, because the league already knows about it and they can decide what to do with it. But, like, it doesn't serve any purpose to publish it, you know what I mean?
I'm just saying,
from the referee's perspective. Like, if somebody's like, "Oh, somebody incited violence against a referee," I think if you have evidence of that, you don't want to be like, "And here it is," and like,
I'm just saying,
inadvertently
promote. I'm just saying, I've seen people who were there, or who I assume were there, covering it by quoting JJ's tweet, as opposed to reporting what they themselves heard.
Yeah. Axel Schuster in their year-end presser came out and made Vanny apologize, and also said they reached out to the league and they sent, I believe he said, video of the full interaction so that they would have all the context. Because basically all the league had was that tweet, I believe.
I don't necessarily think that it makes or breaks anything to not have it. It's just a tone thing. Maybe people would feel differently about it if they heard it or saw it. But it's bad, and it looks bad because it's bad.
Yeah, I mean, I'll also say, like, I think this is, like, simultaneously serious and kind of overblown, in that I think that it's being investigated. I will say this, MLS just updated as of 5:38 p.m. tonight their disciplinary summary, and all it still says under Vanni Sartini is first match of 2024 MLS regular season. So if they're going to do something, this was like almost 2 weeks ago, so I'm pretty surprised nothing's come of it yet, which is either good or very, very bad. But this doesn't feel like a moment of, like, what happened in New England, you know, of, like, we need to do this really lengthy investigation and something really, you know, a really serious punishment could be coming, because it ultimately, I feel like if a fine was coming to Vanny, an additional suspension, it would be for all the other shit he said, which is like the league, you know, the league only wants their big teams, their big stars to win. Also, like, however it plays out, it will play out however it does. And I think whatever punishment they level at Vanny is probably fair. I also fundamentally disagree with a lot of what Vanni Sartini said about their performance. I mean, I think it's fair to say Tim Ford did not have a great game. I feel like it's incredibly unfair to say that, like, he rigged the game or he cost the Whitecaps. I was there. I watched the game. The Whitecaps didn't play that well. I thought they certainly punched above their weight from the first game. I had no sense during this game of, like, oh, they got completely robbed. It honestly, there was moments, and it was frustrating because it felt close. It was frustrating because we wanted the penalty, but it was clear Larea was looking for it. I agree, if you're going to give one, you should give the other, but I think that Vanni Sartini's sense of indignation that somehow it had cost them, I was like, it was still only game two. Like, okay, you won this one, and then you go back to LAFC and get pummeled again. I'm all for standing up for your team. He clearly crossed a line. Axel Schuster was very clear about, you know, it was a mistake to be sent off. It was a mistake to handle it and make the comments. It was a mistake from the young players to surround the referee. And I think that, to me, is kind of the more important thing here, especially from Vanni Sartini, is, like, you just need to have a more realistic assessment of what happened, and you can't let your emotions get the better of you here. There's no need for him to get sent off. It accomplishes nothing for the team. And then to just continue and continue and continue sets a really bad example. And, you know, given how sort of serious the comments could be taken, I'm like, you really are putting your job in jeopardy. So you're really not achieving anything by it.
If Brian White scores the chance, to your point, mm-hmm. if Brian White scores the chance that went over the bar just before that, none of this happens in the same way that it ended up happening.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's like, to get so frustrated at Tim Ford, be like, yes, he initially made the wrong call on the field for that second goal, and then they made the right call and got it right. So really, we're just down to one mistake. You know, like, the refereeing crew did their job together, and I guess you could still say two mistakes for not calling the penalty. I just, you know me, I'm a win it in the 90 and, like, make your, like, winning a game will speak volumes more than being like, man, the referee just wanted LAFC to win. Like, come on, give me a break. Like, he had a bad game. He made some bad calls. I don't think Tim Ford is out there being like, I'm going to make sure LAFC get through.
It's one of those things that it sucks to get into the vibe of it, because if you're constantly going to be, if you're constantly going to feel paranoid about officials are going to be weird around you, and it's going to be a cycle that feeds into each other.
It's a good point. Outside from, even let's say there's no further fine or suspension coming Vanny's way, do you think a lot of calls are going to go his way next season? Do you think the Referees Association is going to be kinder and more equal-handed with Vanni Sartini and the Vancouver Whitecaps? Or do you think they're going to be even more judicious and letter of the law? Like, that stuff, there's a human element there that, you know, I respect the referees aren't going to just suddenly be like, well, screw the Whitecaps and do us dirty. Although, yes, it does feel like that at times. It's just not realistic when you watch the rest of the league and you're like, it happens, and it does not mean that the powers that be will not let your team win. Like, come on, are we that surprised that the Vancouver Whitecaps lost 1-0 to LAFC in the playoffs? Like, is that so hard to believe that we really think there's, like, a deep state thing going on here? Just... And again, Vanny not doing himself any favors. I like the guy, and he can be fun, but he clearly needs to sort the discipline issue out. And I think it also affects the team. And it got them nothing. I felt like it ended the game on a really sour note. It ended the season on a really sour note. And now everybody's talking about this as opposed to what an overall really great season the Vancouver Whitecaps had. And how there's a really promising core group of players that feels close to something better. So I think more than anything, the Vanni Sartini has just put himself under a microscope from not just the league and the officials, but his boss. You know,
yeah.
Like Axel Schuster's put up with enough shit in his time around the Whitecaps that I don't think he'll hesitate to be like, you had your chance. We stood by you. I think Fanny's been given a shot, and I think he needs to take it a little bit more seriously and just watch himself a little bit more in these press conferences for what he's saying. And I don't think that he did have any real malicious intent, but I still think his comments were unprofessional and are worthy of fines and suspensions.
You mentioned it earlier, but Sporting Kansas City did indeed sweep St. Louis, the 8th seed, sweeping the number 1 seed with two straight, 1-2-1 at home. Dembe scores in first half stoppage time after a good hold-up play from Polito and Shallowy. I really love how in the highlights package for this one, the commentators are like, there's just been nothing from Sporting Kansas City for about 20 minutes. And then they immediately break back in the other direction.
Oh, yeah?
Johnny Russell plays in Gadi Kinda, who finds Daniel Shallowy to go up 2-0.
Nothing's really happening is the clarion call of Johnny Russell.
Pompeo had an amazing goal for St. Louis that was hit with the left foot from outside the box, but it did not pay off. And it's a challenging to do so well and especially start so hot as St. Louis did and not make it past the first round of the playoffs. But hey, it's your debut season. Everybody has gotta take on a bit of adversity and learn from stuff.
It comes for all of us in MLS. Yeah, and they felt like they were certainly sputtering, and I just think they met the, you know, you have a team that's lacking consistency, even though they did so well through most of the season, to come up against a team that just has really struggled, but now all of a sudden can't do wrong, it seems. Like, that's always going to be a tough task. And credit to Sporting Kansas City, because I honestly feel like, you know, St. Louis showed up and certainly tried, and I thought had moments, but this was also Sporting Kansas City's moment, and the wind in their sails, they were like, no, we're taking this thing, and they really didn't look too bothered in this series. Of course, the Ndembe injury blow sucks, but when you have a group of players that has gone through so much adversity and had to use its depth through so much of the season, you know, if that can go one of two ways, but Peter Vermes has been able to milk that for everything it's worth and turn it into a very galvanized team that all of a sudden, you know, they've figured it out because they figured it out the hard way on the pitch through a lot of losses, what the chemistry was and what the system was. And now that it's working, you know, they're going to be up against Houston. And you know, I thought Houston has obviously played really well. They were able to get past RSL on PKs in the last game of that series. But
two sets of PKs.
Two sets of PKs, that's right. I wouldn't say Houston looks like a shoo-in in that. So I think if you're a Sporting Kansas City fan, you're at least saying like, oh, come on, we got to go on to face Seattle or LAFC. Like one of those two teams is waiting for us. Houston will be a tough task, but certainly not impossible, and certainly not impossible for the Sporting Kansas City side, I think. How do you feel?
I think that's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun one, and like I said, Sporting Kansas City is now my chaos team. The other wild card pick from the Eastern Conference, New York Red Bulls, also ended their series on the second game. However, they were not successful. Losing hosting Cincinnati and losing on penalty kicks.
Yeah, which I felt like, you know, overall is a way to go out against Supporter Shield winning, Coach of the Year winning, Goal of the Year winning Cincinnati. Not a bad showing. I think this was maybe where I was like slightly surprised by moving on from Lizane, but, you know, not the worst performance in the playoffs. It's sometimes, as we Whitecaps fans know, it's the strength of the opponent you're up against that matters.
Yeah, and that was one where we saw Celentano got the save to push that on. Berkey who, he says.
Yeah. No, I mean, and from Cincinnati, it really was a good performance and quite a scrappy one. And there was moments of this one that I thought the Red Bulls were kind of bossing Cincinnati around a little bit. So, again, I feel like to take it to PKs was not a bad one. But, yeah, this is where Troy Lizane gets sent off. And it was definitely a scrappy one. And I think we saw Miazga get into it a little bit. He got his second yellow, which was his third of the series, which means he misses the next game, and that's a big blow for them. But he kind of got caught up in the antics of that one and cost himself a starting spot in their first game in the next series.
Dallas was able to rescue the series with a 3-1 win at home, but was not able to bring anything to bear away. And lost to Seattle 2-1.
It true. Yeah, I was genuinely surprised as anybody, I think, about the second game where Dallas was able to put 3 past Seattle. And it's kind of one of those like, oh, okay moments. And then they played Seattle again. You're like, oh, okay. I mean, it was still close, and I felt like they held on in a very nervy game, shall we say, at Lumen Field. Like, I certainly don't think the Sounders felt comfortable in this one. It really just was a golden opportunity off a rare misplay from Dallas's back line that João Paulo finds it, and he just threads it through for Ruznak, who just times his run so perfectly and just runs past all 4 defenders and tucks it through Paz's legs. Other than that, like, wasn't a lot in it for Seattle for sure, but Dallas did not register a shot on goal until the 88th minute. And that's a hard place to come from in the playoffs, I think.
Yeah. No, you've got to consider doing that. You got to maybe think about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not impossible, but it's not recommended, shall we say.
I talked a massive game in the last podcast about how I felt that the home teams in Game 2 of all of these series were going to have we're going to experience a big swing. And I don't necessarily think that happened as much as I thought it would happen. It certainly wasn't an all but one sweep like the top seeds were. But this seems to be an example of a game where Dallas is energized playing in front of their home fans. They got it going and did not have, you know, it's a team that was, it was 7-3-7 at home and 4-7-6 away. So, definitely, I feel like a team that was not able to get that same verve on the road.
Yeah, I agree. No, I mean, I like Dallas. I like the way they play. I like the way they're set up. I like that they're so defensive minded. I think Paz is a great goalkeeper as well, but man, need a DP striker. I think we've said it a couple of times here, like, love Jesus Ferreira, love the gumption. Is he the striker you build your entire team around? I think Seattle Sounders answered that question for them. Not saying they get rid of him, but, you know, it's a possibility he leaves anyway. And I think just Dallas is just missing, you know, one or two pieces, goal scoring pieces that will really help them push past this level. But I still think it's a good shout for if you're a strong defensive team in MLS, you definitely have a shot in the playoffs, but sooner or later, not being able to put it in the back of the net consistently is going to come back to bite you.
Do you know who is a striker you can build your team around?
Who dat?
Jojo Giakoumakis.
Yeah.
Who was a big part of this of Atlanta series and played like out of his mind in the 4-2 win at home. It did not pan out for Atlanta as Columbus then went back and got their own 4-2 win. But he looked amazing in that game too.
Yeah, Atlanta's a weird one. They were another one where I was like, well, given on performance of game two, like maybe this is Atlanta that could come into this. But it was not to be, as you said. I think from that second game, the Atlanta 4-2 win, had like when the Crew were switched on, they look deadly. But when they switch off, they do look a bit like the Rapids at times. Like just when they commit so many men forward, they can be incredibly disorganized at times. And it's in those times that a team like Atlanta can come back and just, you know, slay you. And then the same but in reverse, as you said, kind of happened. I was like setting up and kind of messing about while this game started, and I missed the first two goals in before the 20 minutes. But every time I walked into the room, it was just like, you know, 10 yellow shirts in and around Atlanta's box, just hammering away. You know, and then I think by 33 minutes, it's 3-0. You know, and it just kind of, as much as we see the goals come in for Atlanta here and a bit of fight, I think it was Giakoumakis and Silva who got the goals for Atlanta.
Right.
It really was just a pretty perfect Crew performance. And I think it speaks to the level of ability that Atlanta has to, you know, to get some goals and fight a little bit. But this game felt, you know, pretty game set and match through most of it.
I will give you the chance to burn or heal in regards to this. Do you think, given the crowd of yellow shirts, as you noted, do you think that the high number of defensive turnovers, that were the high number of turnovers won by Columbus in both of these games is a result of that aggressive pressing or bad defense?
Why can't it be both? Well, I sort of put like, you know, despite this performance, I still think the Crew for me leaves me with more questions than answers because they're so dangerous going forward. They do press relentlessly, but they clearly leave these huge gaps and are also prone to just defensive miscues themselves. So I think for Atlanta, what I really saw in this game is it was just very disjointed, and a lot of the giveaways really were from Atlanta's side. Like, yes, Columbus has to be in the right position to, you know, to read the pass and win those passes, but it was nothing buttery smooth from Atlanta. And to me, that was just the, like, the chemistry of that team isn't fully there. When it is, they look great, but there was still an awful lot of errant passes from, I think, pretty veteran players. And to me, that just means, like, the system isn't quite figured out yet, because if you don't know where your player is supposed to be, you're not anticipating the pass because you can't anticipate the run, you end up giving balls away. And it just felt like a lot of the time Atlanta would win possession, look to play the switch, and immediately hit it to somebody else. And again, there just wasn't that fluidity there that I think the Crew have more of. So I think defensively Atlanta are actually maybe a little better than some of these goal lines suggest. It's that, yeah, not everybody knows what everybody needs to be doing at times.
I'm not trying to be negative to Miles Robinson, who is great, but it would also be very funny if his last act in MLS, if he left this summer, or if he left this winter / summer, and his last act was was coughing up the ball to Darlington Nagbe in the 8th minute.
Happens, right? I think Dax McCarty had a howler in the Orlando game.
That's right.
It happens to the best of us, and Dax McCarty sure as hell is one of the best of us.
Yeah, that sucks. That one was really tough.
Yeah, and it's a game of fine lines. As good as Orlando has been, again, a very strong defensive side in Nashville, and it's really just this miscue that Angula jumps on to score. And Nashville, it's like, the elephant in the room is just that Mukhtar's out there trying to carry the team on his back. They've got a great back line. They've got Mukhtar. And the rest of the piece is not quite enough to fully support a real attacking side. And we know Orlando can certainly pummel you, but they're also very happy to just hang on for a 1-0 win. And they kept Mukhtar so quiet in this deciding game. They just gave him absolutely nothing. He had not an inch to play out there on the pitch, and that teams for some reason really struggle to pick up on that. But if you can do it, Nashville just had nothing. I also note here, again, not to be too harsh on a player, I like Anibal Godoy. I think he's a solid player, but I think that they need an upgrade in the defensive midfield, because it was not his best, and certainly not the sole deciding factor in this. But the lack of a striker, and I think a deeper DP mid is maybe a thing that could help Nashville out.
The other game two series ender that ended with a 1-0 was New England with an away 1-0 was New England Philadelphia. Mark Anthony Kay getting sent off for stomping on Daniel Gosdag's chest. He looked a little bit unhappy about that. Maybe he felt that it was Gosdag who got physically involved with him.
Yeah, he chested me in the bottom of my cleat. I mean, it sucks. I mean, I Mark Anthony Kay, we've seen him, like, he plays with his heart on his sleeve, but I don't think he's out there stomping on dudes for fun, regardless of the situation. But you do have to try a little harder to not stomp on a player and to be so outraged at the red card. I was like, that's not a great look. Like, you can't stomp on a player. You also kind of do see in the VAR review of, like, Mark Anthony Kay's eye is on the ball, but he knows Gazdag is underneath him, and he has a clear opportunity to step over, and instead plants the foot. And even if that's a reflex, like, you can't do that. And Donovan taps in an easy free kick. It's 1-0, and then Philly just smother New England, just lock the back door soccer, just nothing in it. It feels like this is probably the last we'll see of Gustavo Bow, and the Union roll on.
The Union roll on.
They will be facing Cincinnati in the next round.
Oh, that's spicy. I think that's going to be
that's
fun
a spicy
because
one.
These. So I feel like, LAFC has won, Cincinnati has won, and Philadelphia has won, where if you lose in the two games, you're just going to go, they're really good. I don't know what to tell you. But so that will be a fun match to see the two of them together. I've just double checked the MLS playoff format. So we are done with the best of threes.
Goodbye.
Starting next round, we have a single game hosted by higher seed. We are also back to regular overtime with 2 minute extra time womp, periods. Womp. How have you felt format wise here?
I admire the chaos of it all. I feel like if every series that we just saw had gone to a best of three, I'd be a little bit beleaguered by now. But I feel like it kind of worked as they maybe hoped, where you get a few extra games in there. You know, maybe an extra chance for some of these clubs that you're like, you know, it's not entirely convincing. They maybe just need a third game to make it happen. I got to say this, though, like if Apple's seriously and Apple and MLS are serious about really wanting to expand, they just got to make some of these formats simpler and more consistent throughout, because like they put it on the Jumbotron at the Vancouver game explaining it, and Travis and I just keep looking at each other and I'm like, you get it yet? It's just like, it feels a bit like a Monty Python routine trying to explain what all is going on. So I'm fine with it, but I feel like we could probably simplify the format somewhat, but where's the fun in that?
Where is the fun in that? I'm looking at what it would be. So it was, Seattle, the first games were Seattle 2, Dallas 0, Columbus 2, Atlanta 0, and Dallas then. So if we went best 2 out of 3, if we went with aggregate goals instead of doing the other thing, we would be looking at 3-1. The Seattle Dallas series would have been 3-3, with Seattle winning with an away goal if you chose to use that rule. The Columbus would have been exactly the same. It would have been 4-4 with Columbus on away goals. The Houston one would have been, waiting for the labyrinthine MLS page to load on that. The Houston one would have been Houston 3, Salt Lake 2. So I guess the team that would have won in a aggregate goals since went through in all series. And some of the games were relatively interesting. Some of them were 1-0s, and that was fun too. So I don't know if I would want to see it again. Do I feel like it was like 1,000% more exciting than an aggregate goal series would have been, or single knockouts would have been? I don't know. Some of the games were more interesting than their counterparts would have been in an aggregate game series, but I don't know that so much was gathered that I would be like, oh yeah, you've got to bring this back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to me, it just seems like the obvious thing they're looking for here is a few more games near the end of the season.
And if there was no Leagues Cup and it was, if there was no Leagues Cup and this was the first week of October, fucking great. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I agree. I don't think we learned a lot more. Given that we are now down to 8, who you got in these rounds? We got Sporting Kansas City and Houston coming up next in the semifinals in the West. What are your thoughts there?
Sporting Kansas City, Houston. I am getting my popcorn out. I am also saying Sporting Kansas City for the LARFs.
Yeah, I think I originally had picked Houston. Yeah, I agree. I think it could be either. Probably watching this game, I'm slightly cheering for SKC. I think Houston maybe has enough to get the job done. But I don't know anymore. I don't know anymore. Peter Vermes has put the doubt in me. LAFC Seattle.
Ooh! I think this is going to be LAFC.
Yeah, I do too. But, look. If any team has shown us that they can just pull something out of nothing and suddenly end up in a final, it's Seattle. But I also feel like it's got to be LAFC, right?
One would think.
One would be surprised if it was not. It'll be interesting to see if Tim Ford is assigned to that game.
Orlando, Columbus. Who you got?
This is where things get interesting because I. Okay, I'm just going to say Orlando and commit to that answer. I really like what they're about. They're good at 1-0 wins. That's what it might take against Columbus. But if Columbus is bashing in goals like they've been doing, I think the doors are going to come off of this game and it could be like a 5-4 slugfest. Wilfred Nancy, again, this is the thing with Columbus. When they're good, they look like one of the best clubs in MLS. Easy. We know they can bang in goals. But they have... They have their Achilles heel, and I think Orlando knows that, and I think Orlando has maybe the slight edge here. Folks can disagree with me on it, but I feel like just given form and given everything this season, I actually pick Orlando in this one, but I'm prepared to be wrong.
Cincinnati, Philadelphia.
Kind of the same? Same answer? It would be really disappointing for the Union. I also feel like they're not a completely finished product. I think the fact that Cincinnati's missing Miazga through suspension and Philadelphia missing Kai Wagner maybe cancels each other out. And what could have been an advantage to either team now doesn't really give us any more information. They're both missing starting players that are pretty key in different areas of the field. I slightly think Cincinnati on this one. I think that Cincinnati has shown they have what they need to make it through. I pick them to be in the final. I would be quite surprised, and I think it would be Cincinnati's own undoing if they're not. So if they're going to make it to the final, they got to beat the Union first. And I think it's Cincinnati, man.
I think it's pretty hard to root against this, especially with Cincinnati at home in the single elimination format. I will say that I want it to be Philadelphia. Not that I would hate it for either of them, but I think that it would be, I would be amused by it.
The chaos vote. Yeah. And it could certainly happen. Like I take nothing away from Jim Curtin and Philadelphia. Again, obviously their track record speaks for itself, but you know, they've always had this thing where they seem to choke in big moments, and it's not always their fault, but I think I need more consistency from the soccer gods to feel like the Union come out of this one. But truly anything can happen. I think the round ones all kind of ended sort of as you would have thought. The semifinals are going to be interesting for sure, because I feel like it is entirely possible with all four matches that they could go either way. So that's how it should be, right? It should be an even match. The cream rises to the top. We got the setup. We are moments away from learning who's going to be in the conference finals.
And I would love it to be a toss-up, because the fact that we've got through 1.5 rounds, weeks of playoff action, and the top seven of the top eight seeds are in. Come on, let's see a little jangling if we're going to have some extra teams in here.
Yeah, this is what we came for. Let's do this.
As we were talking, Canada was eliminated by Jamaica in the CONCACAF Nations League, so we don't have the biggest biggest rundown on that, but that was a 4-4 aggregate tie that had a according to CBC, controversial late penalty. And now Canada will have to go to a play-in tournament, I believe, to potentially qualify for the Copa America, which a lot of people have pointed to as being a must-reach target for Canada, which is undergoing turmoil off the pitch, but usually can find ways to succeed on it if they get that stage.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the drama continues.
Jamaica's a good team, but dang,
Jamaica's a good team.
Canada can't make it easy for themselves. Until we learn who is in the MLS Conference Finals, where can we find you online?
You can find me online at thatswmls.com on Instagram, thatswmls. And you can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts and wherever else you get your podcasts. Where can we find you?
You can find me at www.team-bates.com, Team Batesy on Instagram, Team Bates at mastodon.social, Team Bates at blue.sky or whatever that's called. You know, teambates.bsky.social. Team Bates or Team Batesy, basically. Look, it's probably, if you see a big guy with a beard, it's me.
That last one had all the conviction of a striker running in to defend a final corner of a game. Just, I'm coming. No, I'll be there. Stand over here. Oh, dear. And until next time.
Don't stomp. Don't get sent off.
Don't stomp your way off.